The causes of the First Punic War. The Punic Wars, which are the wars between Rome and Carthage, are the wars that expand Rome from a regional power into an international, if you will, Mediterranean power. You know, the ancients believed when you defeat somebody, you take your land. And by the time the Romans are done fighting the Carthaginians in the First, the Second, and the Third Punic War, they will have added Sardinia, Corsica, Sicily, Spain, and North Africa to their empire. And of course, while the wars were going on, the Carthaginians frequently sought assistance and allies, which then led directly to the wars with Macedonia. So it's really going to bring about the expansion of Rome. The Punic Wars are also the catalyst for changing the character of Roman society. See, prior to the through all Punic Wars, the Roman army was made up of land-owning citizens. You had to own land. They believed that if you didn't own land, you would not be supportive of the state. You needed to have something to lose. But the Punic Wars, and particularly the second one, will be so devastating to the countryside and to the manpower base that this will lead to what is referred to as the Marian reforms. And that is that all you have to be is a citizen to be a member of the Roman army, which begins the changeover from loyalty to state, to loyalty to general. So even though they're Romans, retired or given land after their conquest frequently depends upon how good their general is. So this will change the loyalties away from the state to the local general, which will lead to more civil war and what have you. So the Punic Wars are very important in the expansion of the empire, which means pressure on the republic form of government, because the government of Rome really is not designed as a conquest government. You know, and part of the problem Rome will have is, how do we set up these governments out and away? How do we distribute citizenship and leadership issues and a larger army? So the Punic Wars are essential in understanding what happens to the Roman psyche and the Roman government and the Roman economy and everything else. So we'll start off with the First Punic War, and the causes are relatively simple. It's pretty much a trade dispute, and dispute in Sicily. Now, the Romans have spent time conquering, a significant amount of time, conquering the Italian boot, the Italian peninsula, the whole area there, up to the Alps. And, of course, when they got to Magna Graecia, the Greek states, the city-states along the southern coast, they, of course, began conquering them, and the Greek response was, let's hire the best mercenary money can buy. And so they brought Pyrrhus of Epirus in, and he is unsuccessful, and eventually those places will fall to Rome. Well, now that leaves the two major trading groups would be the Greeks and the Carthaginians. The Greeks traded throughout the Mediterranean. The Carthaginians did also, although their focus is really in the western Mediterranean and then along the African coast, because they're the surviving part of old Phoenicia after the destruction of Tyre by Alexander the Great. And, of course, their main product that they're selling is murex, which provides purple dye. They're also selling gold and other minerals and products. So there's all sorts of things. And then you have the Greeks who are also trading. They have city-states, some outposts there in southern Iberia. But Carthage is, for the most part, over there. Well, now you have this new Roman group in Italy sitting right in the middle between the two. And, of course, as they become more powerful, they want to trade as well. They don't want to just buy. They have products to sell. So they would like to expand their trade. Well, it's pretty hard expanding the trade. Particularly, the easiest way to expand trade would be to the islands, Sicily, Corsica, and Sardinia, which are very heavily in the Carthaginian economic fold, if you will. So there are various deals that are made. There are boundary lines that are set. And the Carthaginians are pretty strict about enforcement. If they catch a trading state in their territory after a treaty's been signed, they confiscate the ship, they take the cargo, and then they tie a rock around the neck of each crew member and drown them. So this leads to a significant amount of conflict. And then there's Sicily itself. Now, Sicily has a Carthaginian section, and then it has an independent section. The city of Syracuse controls most of the island. But the Romans have had a good look at it. Now, Pyrrhus of Epirus, remember the mercenary that the Greeks, Magna Graecia, hired? He then later on tried to create a state in Sicily and was unsuccessful. And when he left, he made the comment that Sicily will be a wonderful location for the Romans, the Syracusians, and the Carthaginians to fight over. So those are the basic issues. The actual start of the war is one of the, if you're looking for an excuse, that's what we're going to end up with. We're going to have the circumstances show up that will lead to the war. The incident that starts it is a pirate attack on the town of Messina. Of course, Messina is on the northwest coast, northeast coast of the island, which is right across from Italy. Very crucial spot. It's one of the most conquered cities in the ancient world because of its important location. But it's basically independent. And it's attacked by a group of pirates. Well, you know, if you're attacked by a group of pirates, and you're independent, you ask for everybody for help. So they ask for Carthaginian help, they ask for Roman help, and they ask for Syracusian assistance. Well, of course, that has to get to the Roman Senate. The Roman Senate has to discuss it, and they say, "Well, okay, we really shouldn't allow this to fall in the hands of pirates because that's bad." Well, actually, it's bad for all three people. You don't want a crucial city like that falling into the hands of pirates because they could really choke off trade. So the Romans dispatch an army, but the Carthaginians are on the island already, and they dispatch a force. So by the time the Roman army arrives, the pirates have taken over the city of Messina, and are in the process of being attacked by the Carthaginians. Well, the pirates ask for Roman help. Well, this is an interesting dilemma. So the people they were sent to get rid of are now fighting the Carthaginians, and the Romans decide that they didn't want to have Carthage control Messina either. So they come in and begin assisting the pirates. This leads to the fighting between the two groups. This leads to the fighting and what we refer to as historians call the Punic Wars. And it's unusual because it's fought in two different areas. It's not just, you know, I'm not talking about Sicily and North Africa, because there will be a fighting, but it's fought on land and sea. The Carthaginians are experts at naval warfare. You know, the Romans do not even have a war fleet at the beginning of this contest. The Carthaginians use the same standard tactics that the Greeks use, which is ramming. They will try to close with the enemy, ram, and board. Simple operating procedure. Most of the major battles of the Punic War will actually occur on the sea. Now, there's also land fighting. Now, on land, the Romans are superior because the Carthaginians, for the most part, are, like I said, they're seamen, they're naval people. Their land army tends to be mercenaries that are led by competent Carthaginian generals, and when they aren't competent, they go out and buy the best mercenary general money can buy. So you will have an incident where after a major land defeat, they go out and hire the best. They have a Spartan, a guy named Xanthippus, who will come in and will successfully boot them out. So this will go back and forth. And really, it's also it's a good example of, to some extent, how modern warfare is today. It's expensive. There are lulls in the fighting, basically due to both sides running out of money. Building ships is expensive. So in the early part of the war, the Romans are victorious on land. That is, most of the land fighting is in Sicily. And the Carthaginians will be successful on the sea. And eventually the Romans will then come around and it'll change. The Romans will become more successful at sea, and the Carthaginians will find a brilliant general who is able to kind of checkmate the Romans on land. But it's the sea battles which determine it. Now, I know some of you are saying, all right, well, if the Romans didn't have a navy, how did they create one? Well, they copied a Carthaginian ship that had come ashore in a storm. And then they sail out, and through process of trial and error, they realize that they're terrible at fighting. They need to change the tactics. One of the Roman specialties is if they found somebody that was better than they were at some aspect, they either tried to figure out a way around it or a way to copy it or something that they did that could compensate for it. And what the Romans are going to do is they're going to change naval warfare from just ramming to more boarding aspects. And the Carthaginian fleets will be mostly oarsmen with few regular sailors. The Roman ships that will be constructed will have sailors, but they'll also have anywhere from 50 to 100 or more legionnaires, fully armored legionnaires. So the object of the Roman fleet is to close and board and then use that with the heavy troops to take out the sailors. So there'll be more soldiers on a Roman ship than there would be on a Carthaginian ship. They're not putting catapults on these things at this point. Now, in order for this to work, you know, you've got now Roman armor is not what you're thinking of at the time of Augustus, that magnificent segmented lorica. It's a little chainmail type of stuff. It looks very much like the Greek equipment with a rectangular shield. Now, what the Romans created that gave them the edge is called a corvus. It's a drawbridge. It's a wide plank, it's multiple feet wide, and it's long enough so that you can, and they put it on the front of the ship so that you can swivel it at least 180 degrees. And then it has a gigantic iron spike on the end of it. And what they do is when they get close enough, they drop this corvus, and the raven beak breaks through the enemy deck and locks the ship together. And then the wide drawbridge, this bridge, if you will, the Roman legionnaires can then march across with their shields locked until they get onto the enemy ship and then start hacking away. It's really successful. And the best part of this is when you win, you get a completely undamaged ship. Now, yeah, they're still going to be ramming, but they're capturing a lot of ships at the same time. And as I go through the First Punic War, you're going to probably find that the most dangerous opponent was neither side. It was Mother Nature. These warships, these triremes and the ships that they used act very much like a flat-bottom fishing boat in a storm. They go over the first wave and through the second one. So storms are going to destroy hundreds of ships and thousands of men. So this will be really fascinating. Of course, as I said, as the Romans got better at naval warfare, a prodigy of a Carthaginian general learns the Roman tactics on land warfare, and that's Hamilcar Barca. And he's most noted for his children, Hasdrubal, Mago, and Hannibal. But that's later. So that gets us into the beginning of the First Punic War, the causes and kind of the differences between the two. As far as sources, the Punic Wars by Goldsworthy, the History of the Romans by Bourne, the History of the Roman People, by Heckelheim. There is a Roman account of the Punic Wars, but that is the Second Punic Wars, called the War with Hannibal by Livy. And we'll get to that at another time. I also have a book on ancient naval warfare, but the author is missing on it, both on the spine, and that page is torn out. So I'll look that up and get you that at another time. So hope you enjoyed that. Don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com. Leave a comment, ask a question, and thank you very much.